compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, we're back. Thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can also send me a message on Twitter. My address there is at Patrick Madrid. Speaking of which, Cyrus, I know you saw it because you commented on it, but I thought it was really funny, the picture of you and me at work.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good time with that.
Yeah. And at the very end, you can see that you're fed up and you just sort of, you've had enough and you just, that's my favorite part.
It's so funny. I thought I had a good zinger on you in that particular Twitter thread.
You did. It was funny.
You shut it down quick, but I had a moment. It was great.
Just one moment.
It was a moment. That's all I need. Yeah. Just one moment.
So I invite everybody to take a look at this picture. So my caption is, and people will immediately know which one is you and which one is me. And the caption I put was, by doing his job adequately, Cyrus makes my job as show host even easier. And when people see this, they'll understand what I'm talking about. And what was your rejoinder?
Well, it doesn't make any sense if you don't see the picture.
Well, that's true.
So okay, you're just going to have to look at the picture and.
All right. Yeah. All right. Stop. How I hate that song.
It's so awful.
It is awful. Yeah. That's a good way to drive me away from a topic like that. Just play music like that.
But, note to self.
Yeah. I want to switch to something else. Now, this is important in this case. I saw somebody on Twitter, you know, the same old kind of hackneyed attempt to disprove Our Lady's perpetual virginity by referring to a couple of Greek terms and saying, well, look, clearly, the brothers of the Lord, I'm paraphrasing, they were clearly the sons of Mary because there are words in Greek for cousin. And so why didn't they use the word for cousin? Sungainus, for example. It's a bad argument, and it's been refuted endlessly over the years, and so I thought it might be a good public service to post a link to St. Jerome's tract called Against Helvidius. Helvidius was we would not know anything about Helvidius had it not been for St. Jerome, and St. Jerome wrote this in the year 383. He was a contemporary, by the way, of St. Augustine, who also firmly believed in the perpetual virginity of Mary, and that Mary did not have any other children aside from Jesus. And she did not have Jesus in the normal way. We call that the virgin birth. But in any case, so this guy Helvidius, who would have been completely obscure had it not been for him attacking this teaching and saying that Mary had other children, and he presumed to interpret scripture to that effect. And so St. Jerome, who was a master, as I point out on Twitter, he was a master of the Hebrew, Greek, and Latin languages. He lived in Bethlehem for many years, and he studied Hebrew. He lived in a cave not far from where Jesus was born, and he studied with the rabbis, and he learned biblical Hebrew from them. And he was perhaps the greatest translator of Scripture, certainly in his day, and for the generation since then, there have been very few that have approached his level of prowess. And he wrote a response to Helvidius. It's called Against Helvidius. And in this, he takes Helvidius's arguments apart like a cheap watch, as the saying goes. So I posted a link to this because it's a thorough refutation of all the standard arguments from the Bible, you know, that Mary gave birth to her firstborn son. Okay, well, does that mean that there were other children beside? No, it doesn't mean that. It's a legal term. Or what about in Matthew chapter 1, where it says that St. Joseph did not know her until she brought forth her firstborn son? Does that mean that there were children after? No, it doesn't mean that. You know, the same basic misunderstandings of Scripture, no different today than they were at the time of St. Jerome. So if you're interested in how this 4th century Bible scholar, church father, Catholic bishop, was he a bishop? I'd have to go back and double check that. I could be wrong on that point. But in any case, he just lands on Helvidius with all four feet and completely shreds his arguments. He goes systematically through all of the arguments that Helvidius used from the Bible, and he shows why they're all a misunderstanding, and that Mary indeed had no other children besides Jesus. So this is one of those, it's like a common cold. It comes back every so often, and this would be a good antidote for that. So if you're wondering, if you're interested, or maybe down the road, somebody says, well, Mary had other children besides Jesus, and you want, like, you know, what did St. Jerome say about that? You'll find it there on my Twitter feed, at P Madrid Show. Oh, no, that's the show Twitter feed. Mine is at Patrick Madrid. What am I saying? Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Teresa in San Diego. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Hi, Patrick. I have a question about baptism and godparents.
Sure.
We have family members who baptized one of our children, our son, mm-hmm. about 2 years ago. He's 3 years now. But unfortunately, now the marriage of the godparents, they are separated, mm-hmm. and she has started a relationship with a woman, and apparently he is in another relationship now as well. So my husband and I were kind of lost at, you know, we kind of want some advice as, you know, what do we do with these godparents now, because they're both in mortal sin, and mm-hmm. obviously
now when you said a minute ago, and maybe I just misheard you, I thought you said that they baptized your children. Did you mean that they were the godparents? They didn't actually baptize the children, did they?
No, they're the godparents.
Okay, got it. I just wanted to make sure
their
I understood the scenario.
Their marriage wasn't good standing at the time.
Okay. Well, it's a difficult situation, obviously, and they can't really function as godparents now. Even though they were godparents at the time, and maybe they qualified, but one of the requirements to be a godparent is that if you're married, you have to be married in the church and live according to the teachings of the church, and they're not doing that, obviously. So they have, mm-hmm. in essence, forfeited their role as godparents. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that you have to go out and get new godparents, but I think for the sake of your children, especially in the event that something were to happen to you and your husband, it would be a good idea, a very good idea, to get some serious Catholics who would be willing to undertake that role. That way, going forward, you would know that your children would have that reinforcement from godparents who really care about what's going on. Now, it's sad that the two people in question, they've walked away from this obligation. That's an obligation before God and the church. So it's not something that you undertake lightly. It's a lifelong commitment to do what you can within, you know, reason. But it is a commitment. And so they have walked away from that, and that adds to the sorrow of the situation. But it's not irreparable for you or for your children. Do you have some people in mind that you'd like to ask to pick up where the other people left off?
It's really difficult. Unfortunately, we that's what we've been thinking about, and I'm actually pregnant as well, and
congratulations,
another child. Thank you. And it's just been really difficult to find adequate mm-hmm. godparents.
Do you not have any family members who might fit the bill?
Well, all the family members that would be able to they are godparents. We have mm-hmm. 5 children right now, and okay. we're expecting our 6th. So
congratulations.
And the last ones, thank you. The last ones, well, they are family as well, but unfortunately they're going through this. But right. We're still looking.
mm-hmm. Well, you can obviously look among your family members and choose wisely, obviously. None of us knows the future, but sometimes you can see the signs of things to come. But you can also choose somebody who's not a family member. Maybe there's a couple in your parish that you greatly respect and you know that they're serious Catholics and they would take this obligation seriously. I mean, you could look beyond the family if you felt that it would be more likely to find the people that you want.
Yes, I think we're probably going to be heading towards that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. It's good that you and your husband are taking this seriously. I'm sorry to hear things went the way they did, but hopefully with the new godparents, you won't have that problem. Hey, by the way, Teresa, this new baby on the way, boy or girl, do you know yet?
Boy.
Have you 100% decided to name him Patrick? Is that in stone yet?
No. I'll have to discuss it with my husband.
Well, I think it's a good name. So I didn't used to like my name when I was a kid, but I love it now because I love the saint that I'm named for. What a great man he was. So yeah, I'm just putting that out there just for consideration, Teresa.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
More question, a really quick question.
Go right ahead.
And this is on behalf of my 13-year-old son. He asked me the other day, he said, Mom, if someone wants to become a priest, if I become a priest and my parents object to it, am I going against the commandment of my mother and father?
Well, the answer I think would be no, because the commandment is to honor your father and mother. And once you reach adulthood, that takes a somewhat different form. When you're still a child, you have to obey your parents and all things that don't involve sin. And when you're an adult, you have the right to make decisions like what do you want to do with your life? And if you feel God calling you to the priesthood, well, that's God calling you. So you have to go listen and find out if that's a real vocation. So it wouldn't be infringing upon or offending against that commandment. Because everybody, when they reach adulthood, they have the right to make those decisions for themselves. Now, it's good to consult your parents. It's good to listen to their advice, especially if they're giving you good advice. But on a situation like this, you're not obligated to do that. So, you know, if he's 13 years old right now, he does have to listen to you. But when he gets older, he could say, thanks, Mom, but I think I'm going to go study for the priesthood.
Yeah, that's what, and I said, I don't think so, because above all things, you should love God.
That's right.
But he was like, he was thinking about it. He's like, that's a good one, Mom. You should ask Patrick.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that he asked, and I'm glad we had a chance to answer that. Well, Teresa, how far until the new baby is here?
I'm actually going to be induced on Friday.
Okay, so it's right around the corner. Well, we will all pray for a safe and happy delivery for you and the baby. That's wonderful.
Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Teresa. And my sincere hopes that you find two very good and well-qualified godparents for this baby and for the other children who are left without godparents now. Thank you. As long as we're on the topic, just here's a quick refresher. Here are the requirements for godparents. If you want to be a godparent or if you want to choose a godparent, here are some things that are required. Number one, each child can have a godfather and a godmother, but only one godparent is absolutely necessary. So it's customary to have a godfather and a godmother, but you don't have to. You can just have one if you so choose. Each godparent must be registered for a baptism preparation class. Now, this is not part of the church's law. This would be more custom at the parish level. But it's good to have the godparents understand fully what is required of them. Now, here's some of the strict requirements. You have to be at least 16 years of age. You have to be a fully initiated Catholic, meaning that you have to have received your sacraments of initiation, namely baptism, confirmation, and the Holy Eucharist. So if you're a baptized Catholic, but you've never been confirmed, you're ineligible to be a godparent. It's an incentive to receive your sacraments, but without confirmation, for example, you would not be eligible. You must be leading a sacramental life in harmony with the Catholic Church and its teachings. That includes things like, you know, when the Sunday obligation is in force, that you go to Mass every Sunday, that you receive the sacraments as the Church prescribes, and that you live according to the teachings of the Church as best you can. We're all sinners, so it's not saying that you have to be a bona fide saint, but you have to be making the effort to live according to the Church's teachings. You have to be willing to accept the responsibility of helping the parents in the faith life of the child. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be present for birthdays or weddings. If you are, that's nice, but it's not required. What is required is that if you determine or you detect that there's some need that you can assist with in helping form the faith of this child by giving good books or maybe whatever you can do as time goes by, this is a lifelong commitment, keep in mind, you seek to do what you can to help. You're not financially obligated. You don't have to give money. You don't have to give anything other than your time and prayers. So it's not a ceremonial duty. I know that for many people, they think of the godparents as, you know, it's our, the big day, and then they kind of forget about their relationship with the child after that. That's not what the church envisions. So those are some of the requirements, really the basic requirements to being a godparent. Now, you might say, well, what about a non-Catholic Christian? What about my Baptist uncle? He can be a witness, but he can't be a godparent. Because, as I mentioned, to be a godparent, you have to have received the sacraments of initiation, which means that you're Catholic and you're living according to the Catholic Church's teaching. So a Baptist, however fine a man he may be, he would not qualify for that. He could be a witness, but that's a kind of an unofficial honor that you could pay to somebody. But it's not the same thing as godparents. And the godparents are named on the baptismal certificate. So long down the road, you can always find out, well, who were my godparents? I don't really remember. My parents are gone now, and I don't really know who my godparents were. Well, the parish that you were baptized at will have your baptismal certificate on file, and you can request a copy of it. There'll probably be a little administrative fee, but it's, you know, a pittance, and you'll be able to find that. And it's a good idea to have all of those records on hand for purposes of marriage and things like that, because the church does require those documents to make sure that people have received their sacraments. Let's go to Jenny, listening in California also. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I have a question in regards to all the godparents.
Sure.
So my three kids have my sister and brother-in-law for their godparents, because at the time that was really all I knew that were actually practicing Catholic. But now, and I'm their kids' godparents, but my sister and brother-in-law don't go to Mass. Like, they don't put it, you know, God first. Mm-hmm. They don't have, like, I've offered to take my niece and nephew to Mass, but she says, well, Sunday's the day that I like to go do stuff outside and, you know, maybe when he's not in school kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, so it's not
Sunday is my fun day.
Yeah. So my thing is, my fourth child has a really great godmother, and so I finally found a good one then. But my other three, do I need to ask somebody else? Or, I mean,
You could. So the godparents that you picked out before, they've collapsed, right? They're no longer practicing their faith?
They don't practice.
So here's what you could do. You could, I mean, depending upon your relationship with them, you could say, hey, guys, you know, it's bad enough that you're not living your faith anymore, but you made a promise to me and to your godson or goddaughter and to God that you were going to be good godparents. So do you plan to honor that promise? And see what they say. And, you know, it could be that a question like that from you could jar them into reality again, and maybe they will become serious about their faith at some point. But if you pretend that this is just, you know, you just tiptoe around it, I think that in the end, it probably will be a missed opportunity that maybe God wants you to say something to them so that at the very least, you know, their conscience will be pricked, and that's a good thing. And it could make all the difference. So I would encourage you to consider doing that in a, you know, a polite way, a friendly way, but still kind of put it out there. Like, you guys made this commitment. Are you planning to keep it? Because if you're not planning to keep it, I mean, okay, that's between you and God. But I mean, my children need godparents. And since you made a promise, I'm just wondering if you plan to keep that promise.
Okay. Because in regards to, like, me being their two children's godmother, like, they've never done any religious education or anything. Like, my nephew's, he's in fourth grade, and he's not ever done any catechism or anything, and, you know, he hasn't received any sacraments. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's why I offered, like, can I take him then?
And what did they say when you offered that?
That's when she said, oh, well, Sunday, she said, well, maybe when they're not in school, because school is, like, such a priority, you know, homework and school is, like, the most.
On Sunday, no less.
That's like her.
Now, you're the godmother for those children, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she said that, and that's when she said, on Sunday, they like to go be outside and do stuff at the park and stuff like that, and I'm like, well, so do we. We're not inside all day on Sunday, but
well, you know me, I am like Mr. Wet Blanket when it comes to stuff like this. So if you want to really jazz things up, Jenny, I would get, I'm saying this sincerely, I've done this, get a copy of that book called The Dogma of Hell. And if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on the links button in the, kind of the top middle, and it'll take you to that book. You can see a picture of it. I've done this before. I've given that book to people and said, hey, you know, just FYI, since you're on your way to hell, this book will show you what it's going to be like when you get there. I mean, as long as you're going, I mean, wouldn't it make sense that you'd like to know where you're going? Ha ha. I'm only just half kidding. And I've seen some real turnarounds with that book, Jenny. So I know it sounds, you know, outlandish. And for many people, it is outlandish. But I've seen it work before, where you get somebody's attention by saying what I just said. And what have you got to lose? You know, and maybe, just maybe, that book will help them to get their minds right and get back on track. I hope that's helpful. Thanks, Jenny. Let's go now to Betty listening in Miami. Hi, Betty.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I want to thank you for teaching us the privilege of what it is to be a Catholic.
All of you. Thank you.
On the radio.
I feel very privileged to have the opportunity to be on the radio with you. So I'm grateful for that opportunity myself, Betty. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're living out the vision of Pope Leo XIII.
With the smoke of Satan and, coming into the church and what Satan does.
It's all over the country, the smoke and the church. Mm. And I'm having a hard time struggling with accepting the girl that my son has chosen maybe to be serious with or something like this. And it's not mm-hmm. easy.
Yeah, and that's a classic story of the mother-in-law not liking the daughter-in-law or vice versa. Or, you know, what's the old saying behind every successful man is a strong wife? I say that behind every successful man is a strong wife, but also an astonished mother-in-law. Just a little slice of humor. That was certainly true in my case, Betty. My mother-in-law did not like me. She didn't like me.
Really?
No, she didn't like me. And I think I gave her lots of reasons not to like me. But eventually, she and I became, you know, we loved each other. It took quite a while, but at first, I think my mother-in-law was really, like, disappointed, like, oh, you could have done better. But eventually, I won her over, and she won me over. It took some time, but things like that are not uncommon. So unless this girl is just bad news, maybe she is, but, I mean, if she's just somebody that you don't take a liking to, maybe give it some time.
Person.
She may grow on you.
Okay. But they're not practicing Catholics. You know, the dad's a Catholic and the mom is Jewish.
Is the girl baptized?
And I told my son this is going to be a big problem.
Is the girl that your son has brought home to meet you, is she baptized?
No. Okay. Absolutely not.
I would get your son a book by Steve Wood. It's called The ABCs of Finding a Good Wife. And if you're feeling really generous, get her a copy of The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband, also by Steve Wood. That would be a nice matching set and give them something to think about. I'll be right back. Thank you. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro tacos. Don't forget the rice and beans on the plato. I like to eat, homie, yo no estoy flaco. Yeah, I'm chubby, pero I'm still guapo.
Patrick Madrid is on
Taco Tuesday.
Coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Taco Tuesday's my favorite day. That's the reason
all right.
Why I'm on our way.
It is Taco Tuesday.
I'm just trying to eat another plate. Another
one. Taco Tuesday. Where else are you going to get Taco Tuesday? In the world of Catholic radio. Nowhere but here. 888-914-9149. For your good to know file, The third largest Protestant denomination in the United States is splitting over the issue of homosexuality. This, according to the Christian Post, it's the United Methodist Church. They're at the brink of schism. Conservative Methodists are attempting to break away from the United Methodist Church because the United Methodist Church has succumbed to the world and is A-OK with homosexual activity, etc. The split is led by theologically conservative Methodists who are part of the Global Methodist Church. Its 17-member Transitional Leadership Council said that they're making this move. The GMC was originally announced on March 1st by a conservative Methodist advocacy group called the Wesleyan Covenant Association. They're waiting for the United Methodist Church to officially approve the separation. Keith Boyette, president of the Wesleyan Covenant Association, he said that the church has demonstrated an unwillingness to uphold its teachings. In the United States, he said, particularly some bishops, clergy, and churches are operating in open defiance of the teachings of the United Methodist Church. The church has become ungovernable as a consequence. Such unchecked defiance has destroyed the integrity of the church. He said that theologically conservative leaders decided to launch the new denomination, which will be true to its doctrine and teachings and end the endless conflict with the United Methodist Church. He also said that the primary mission of this new group will be to make disciples of Jesus Christ who worship passionately, love extravagantly, and witness boldly. And it's just another example of what happens when people, when they compromise. After a while, you know, you just, what do you stand for? Do you stand for anything? And as being evidenced here, the people who are at least unwilling to go down that road, they find themselves in an intolerable situation. My advice would be become Catholic. You know, we've got plenty of our own problems. We've got plenty of our own divisions, but at least you will not be going further away from the fullness of the faith. You will be coming into the fullness of the faith. And that's a serious invitation that I extend to anybody. Come on in, the water's terrible. In fact, there's a book by that title. Come on in, the water's terrible. It's always a great time to be Catholic, no matter how much uproar the church might be in. It's always a good time to become Catholic. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Pat listening in Dallas. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
I'm calling because I go to Mass every day. I retired recently, and I can always go to Mass now. And I take home the consecrated host to my husband in my Pyx. I have wear it around my neck.
Okay.
And I bring it to him. He's kind of debilitated because of the remnants of a stroke. And so what I want to know is, what are the rules with how you could, I mean, a woman today told me that you can't visit, when you can't talk to anybody when you have the host around your neck. You need to go home right away and give it to the person.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh my gosh, okay, because I've gone to the store before. Oh, no. Anyway.
No.
And
no, no,
I
no, no,
what,
no. Let's pause there. Okay. Let's pause. Okay, oh, let's okay. pause right there. Let's just stop. When you have our Lord with you in the Pyx, don't do anything else. Don't stop for coffee. Don't go to the grocery store. Don't do anything else. The reason you have him with you is to bring him sacramentally to the person who's sick. So do that and only that. Don't do anything else.
Okay.
And when you have given Holy Communion, I presume you have one host in the Pyx, right, that the priest has entrusted you with?
Yes.
Okay. So when you're done and you've rinsed your hands to make sure there are no particles, etc., good idea to maybe have like a little holy water bowl where you can dip your fingers into that so that the particles that might be on your fingers will just dissolve in that water. Don't rinse them down the drain. But when that's done and you've finished with your appointed task, then you can go and do other things. But definitely don't do anything else while you have the Lord with you.
Do I need to go confess that then?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you knew in the back of your mind that you shouldn't do that, but you did it anyway, I would bring it up and say, out of negligence, Father, I did this X number of times, and I didn't really realize that it was a problem. And I just want to be right with God, and I want to confess it. So God knows the extent to which you knew or didn't know. If it were me, I would bring it up. That way I know I don't have to worry about it. but it doesn't sound like you intentionally, maliciously did something that you knew was wrong. It doesn't sound like that happened.
No. No, I wanted to get home and take care of him, but okay. The second question is, what are the prayers that we say when I'm giving him communion? Typically, he says, "Our Father," I tell him what was in the gospel, and then I give him the host. Is that okay?
That's okay. Yeah. I mean, there is a book that your parish will have. It's called The Rites, R-I-T-E-S. And in The Rites, there is, it gives you what you can say when you bring Holy Communion to somebody. So there are some prayers that are prescribed. They're not required, but they're prescribed, and you can make use of those if you wanted to. The parish may have a set of prayers that they would like you to use when you go. So I would inquire with your parish priest, but that book called The Rites is available at any Catholic bookstore, and it would include the prayers to say when you bring Holy Communion to somebody who's sick.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for your help. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I don't want you to be left feeling like I'm, you know, giving you a hard time. I'm not. And I hope you don't feel beaten down or anything. It's just that, you know, when you're bringing the Lord.
I feel just terrible.
Well, don't feel terrible. In other words, if this was an honest mistake, that's all it is. And God knows. So if you were doing something intentionally wrong, then there's room to feel terrible. But you don't need to feel terrible because you didn't know, you know. Yeah, you're doing a good thing by bringing Holy Communion to your husband. God is pleased by that, and I want to encourage you. It's a good thing that you're doing. So please don't feel discouraged after our conversation.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for your help.
All right, Pat. You're welcome. Thank you. And this, just for anybody listening right now, if in the back of your mind, if you're bothered by something and you honestly say, well, I really didn't realize it, but now that I do, it's bothering me that this happened or that this didn't happen, that it should have happened, the easiest way to deal with that is just bring it up in confession. God knows He wants to forgive you. And if there is any sin involved, you are forgiven. And there may not be any sin involved, but it's a great way to assuage your conscience in a good sense. In other words, you don't have to worry anymore about that nagging doubt or that nagging little pain that you feel in your conscience. You won't have to worry about that anymore. If you bring it up in confession, and then it's done. You've left it at the foot of the cross. You know you've been forgiven, and you move forward. It's a very healing thing to do. So consider that, everybody, next time you go to confession. If you have some of those nagging things, you want to get rid of them, bring them up in confession and move forward. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Brandon, listening in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. So we were talking about godparents, and that got me thinking about my godparents who are in their 50s. I'm 28. And I'm a practicing Catholic. And they were as well when I was baptized, but now they've fallen away from their faith. One doesn't practice, and another one went to a different denomination. So I was curious, what's the role that they have now? Is there any role if they're not practicing? And
they've essentially forfeited their role. They walked off the job. Now they probably don't even realize that. But effectively speaking, I mean, technically they're your godparents, but if they aren't living the Catholic faith anymore, then, I mean, they've got bigger problems than just that, but that is a problem that they've walked away from their commitment. So technically they're still your godparents, and I would encourage you to pray for them. Isn't it interesting that the tables have turned now? And whereas before they were the ones who had promised to look after you in your faith life, and now you're in a position of kind of being like a godparent to them in doing what you can do to try to help them get back on track with their faith life, get back to the sacraments. What an interesting and beautiful situation that you find yourself in. Maybe you have that kind of standing with them that a gentle nudge from you can help get them back on track. What do you think? What do you think they'd say?
I don't know. There is relationship isn't very strong between them, but I think a nudge is the right way to go. And I do add them in my daily rosary. So
that's good.
That's a good start, I think.
No, this is a married couple, I take it?
One is single, and one is the other one is married.
Oh, okay. So it's not a husband and wife godparent team.
No,
I get it.
Yeah,
okay.
It's two separate parties. So.
Got it. Okay. So in a way, that kind of decomplicates things because you can work on both of them individually without having to worry about a relationship between the two of them. I think that would make it a little easier, probably.
Yeah, that would be beneficial.
Yeah. Well, I wish you well in this, Brandon. It's good that you're praying the rosary for them, and maybe you can recommend that they listen to this program. You know, an easy way to do that, I'll give you a technique. If you go to the show YouTube page, when you get to YouTube, just look up Patrick Madrid Show and click on videos. And we've got, I don't know, maybe 100 or so clips up there from the show on a variety of topics. And you could pick something that maybe is even just like far from anything controversial and text it to them and say, I was listening to this on the program and I thought it was really interesting. And I thought of you. I don't know why, but I thought of you and I thought you might find it interesting. And just send them a link. And that could be the spark that will get them to start listening to the program. And who knows, maybe in God's providence, they will find their way back to a practice of their faith. It's sometimes it can be as easy as that.
I have to agree, because I'd have to say I've kind of had a reversion, if you will, in my life. And one of the biggest contributors is Relevant Radio. And all it took was an invitation to listen. So
wonderful. Who invited you?
My brother-in-law, actually.
God bless him.
My wife comes from a good, strong Catholic family. So,
well, you married a good woman. Thank God for his many blessings, right? Well, Brandon, press on, go forward, and give it a try. You never know what will happen. Thank you. I'll be right back with more right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
I never tire of that one, Cyrus. That's a good one. Happy Taco Tuesday, and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Hey, I've got a book recommendation for you. You know me. I like to recommend books all the time. This is a new... Well, it's actually new in terms of it being published, but it is not taco-related, by the way. This came out in the 19th century. Father Frederick Faber. He was a contemporary of John Henry Newman in England in the 19th century. And he was a wonderful writer. Many of his works are no longer in print, but this is one of his works that was just brought back into print by Tan Books. It's called A Right View of Yourself, The Devilish Perils and Divine Possibilities of Self-Knowledge. It's a very, very handsome little book, hardbound. I have no connection with this at all. I benefit in no way at all. But I have a copy, and I've been enjoying it, and I thought you might find it interesting. So here's from the table of contents. What holds you back? Your normal state. Fatigue. There's a whole chapter on fatigue. Idleness. Rest. Struggles with temptation. Scruples. And how to rightly view your own faults. I mean, it's easy to see other people's faults. I see them all the time. Right, Cyrus? But it's not as easy. Sometimes it can seem impossible to see your own glaring faults that others can see, but you just can't see them. So this little book, I think you'll find helpful. And it won't take up too much of your time, but I think it'll give you a lot of food for thought.
Can you, what's the name of that book again?
It's called A Right View of Yourself.
All right.
By Father Frederick Faber. And I'll get a link for you, Cyrus, so you can
thank
have
you,
a
sir.
Look at
I
it.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can put it on the shelf with right next to the book on hell. You know?
In all my Patrick Madrid books.
And all the Patrick and Jill books. Yeah. That's an odd collection of books you got there. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Hope you find that book helpful. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Chicago and welcome Michael. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick.
Yeah. Good morning. How can
love
I help?
Your show. Yes. First of all, I love your show. I have a question. If a person were to be on a job interview and not through complete malice, but tell somewhat of a lie or gloss over some subjects or hold back on some certain answers, in the end, tell some lies. And they went and confessed that they had told those lies, would they be obligated to go back to the person they lied to and say, hey, look, you know, during my interview, I wasn't fully honest or forthcoming with some of the information that I gave to you after they've already confessed it?
Yeah, you're getting to the heart of what's called restitution. And in a situation like this, you'd have to weigh those options, whether or not you would be strictly obligated to make that form of restitution. You could make other forms of restitution. Are the things on the in the interview, are they material to the job that you do? So in other words, if you're an airline pilot and you lied about how much time, you know, piloting you've got, and you said, well, I've got 8,000 hours when you really only have 1,000 hours, or if you lied about something that would have a bearing on whether or not you would get that job or you qualified for the job, those kinds of things I think would rise to that level. But if it's something like, you know, do you have, you know, how good is your Spanish? And you say, oh, I'm fluent in Spanish. And maybe you're not fluent, but you're conversational. I don't think that's a big deal. So it would depend, it seems to me, on whether or not these were serious enough that had the employer known the truth, the employer might not have hired you. I think that would be the kind of thing that I would seriously consider bringing up. Now, definitely go to confession, because if, you know, if your conscience is bothering you, as it should, that's a sign that you did something wrong. But the gravity is really something that you would have to determine. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I think it's more of a situation where I was forthcoming with information, but maybe slightly withholding on some specific details and certain specific events.
Well, did the interviewer ask you specifically for the information that you omitted, or did you answer correctly what he did ask you? And then in retrospect, you're saying, and I could have added more, but he didn't ask me about that, so I didn't say anything about that.
That would be part of it, yes.
I don't think that's a problem. I mean, it's obviously you want to fulfill the spirit of truthfulness in addition to the letter. But there are some situations where if you're not directly asked, you may not have any obligation to volunteer information. You may not have an obligation to volunteer information that you were not directly asked about. So if he directly said, have you ever been in trouble with the law and you had a DUI a year ago and you don't mention that? Well, that's a serious omission. That's a form of lying. But if he ever said, if he said, did you ever get a DUI, and you never did get a DUI, and you say, nope, never had a DUI, but you got busted for pot possession when you were a teenager, you know, that's not the question you were asked. So I could see where there might be some gray area for something like that. You see what I mean?
Yes. Okay.
I hope that helps. I mean, if you want to get more specific, we can. But if you think that helps as a general principle.
I think it helps. It was, besides the specific situations, I was more wondering also, Bill, after this sin is confessed, that is the need, like you said, for restitution, how much of that is needed?
That would depend upon the sin. So if it were theft, for example, you would have an obligation to do what you could to restore the amount that you that you stole. Now, it may be impossible to restore it to the person you stole from. So you can make a donation. You can give alms. You can buy, you know, whatever the amount of money was and donate it to the food pantry. So there are different ways of making restitution. It's always ideal if you can make restitution to the person who you stole from, if that's the sin, but it's not always possible. So God understands, and the fact that you want to do something to make things right, that's a good thing. Do you think you'd get fired if you brought up whatever it is that you didn't talk about in the interview?
No, I think that it's more like to your exact example, you know, if there was the question, and just kind of just thinking over it in general, did you get a DUI? Yes. When? A couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When exactly? Well, a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Feeling that, I guess also there is some of, I don't know the exact term for it, but there is also some, I guess, privacy allowed between me and just me and God, for example, between some of the things that right. in exactness of what I have done.
Right. And you have that right. It's called the internal forum. And you have a right to that. That's where you're alone with God. And no one else, other than anyone that you might choose to reveal that to, like in the sacrament of confession, for example, no mm-hmm. one else has a right to know those things except for you and God and whoever you might choose.
So, then to my what I said before, sorry to take up so much of your time, but if you were to say, you know, yes, I did get a DUI, or yes, I did commit theft, to the interviewer, not in confession, but to the interviewer, and, you mm-hmm. know, when was that? Some time ago, is that a good enough answer? Because they have the information about me. They don't need to know it was on Thursday at 3 o'clock.
Right. So if he says, did you ever get a DUI, and you said yes, and he says, how long ago? And you say, a couple of years ago. And if that's satisfactory and he doesn't press the point, then you've fulfilled your obligation. If if he says, well, I need to know. I mean, was it 24 months ago? Was it 36 months ago? I need to know how long ago this was. And if you're vague and you say, well, it was a couple of years ago, or I don't remember, or you lie and you say, well, it was 10 years ago when it was really 2 years ago. I mean, there are ways in which you can lie and commit a sin, obviously. But if he said, did you ever get a DUI? And you said, yes. And he said, when? You said a couple of years ago. And then he just, you know, checks the box and moves on to the next question. You haven't done anything wrong because he didn't ask you for anything more specific.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. This book I mentioned, I think you'll find it very helpful. I don't know if you're suffering from scruples. It could be scrupulosity, but then again, maybe it's not. But this book I mentioned called A Right View of Yourself, there's a whole chapter on scruples, scrupulosity. So that might be a help to you in parsing out. But when you go to confession, Michael, I think this is always a good rule of thumb. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been X months or whatever since my last confession. Here are my sins. And then among your sins, you say, and I'm just, my conscience is bothered because when I was doing a job interview, this happened and I'm not sure if I answered completely, or I feel as though maybe it wasn't entirely honest and it's been bothering me and I want to confess it. And then you're done with it. I mean, how you choose to handle it with the employer is one thing, but as far as your conscience is concerned, you'll know that you have confessed this. And if it was a sin, then you know that you're forgiven and you can move forward without having that nagging at you. I hope that's helpful, Michael. I really do. And I just want to emphasize this book I'm talking about called A Right View of Yourself by Father Frederick Faber. I don't benefit in any way whatsoever from promoting this book. Nobody knows I'm promoting it anyway, except for you. So I just think it's a good resource if you're interested. I think we have time. Let's go now to Amber in Chicago. Hello, Amber.
Hi, Patrick. I'm interested in the black scapular, but there's not much known about it. And I was wondering that when I do get enrolled in a different scapular, do I need to continue wearing the brown scapular as well?
Well, you know, I've never really myself understood the need for all these various versions of the scapular. I mean, the brown scapular, Mount Carmel is the venerable original. So I don't know if there's I'm not trying to discourage somebody from using a sacramental, but it seems as though, you know, you've got the white scapular, the green scapular, the blue scapular, the black scapular, it just seems like you could fulfill those desires to have a devotion to St. Michael the Archangel or Our Lady of Good Counsel or something, and just wear the brown scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. So on one hand, I'm not trying to discourage you from that, but you can see where that leads, because now you're wondering, well, if I wear the black scapular, what about the brown scapular? I would just wear the brown scapular if you've been enrolled in it. Chances are you have been. I would just wear it and wear that, you know, without worrying about the different colors and wearing one or the other. It seems like that would be the easiest, simplest way to proceed. Those are just my thoughts. Okay. What do you think?
No, yeah, I agree. Thank you. That makes sense.
Good. Well, I'm happy to help. And I'm happy to hear that you wear the scapular. That's great. I'll be back with hour three right after this. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.